Excuse me, this is the operator. I'd like to inform all parties this call is being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may begin.
Operator, can you not start the next session, please? We're not ready to start immediately.
Okay.
Okay, guys, can everyone, all counselors, please take your seats? We got to get started on the next session. Can those that are not counselors that are having conversations, if you want to continue to have conversations, please, outside. Thank you.
I think
we have to speak louder.
All right, we'll just start. All right, operator, can you please start the recording?
Thank you. I'd like to inform all participants this call is being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay. Thank you. We're gonna get started on the post-expiration domain name recovery PDP. This is Jeff Newman speaking. I've kicked out our Frenchman. I told him he's gonna go home. Thank you very much. With that, let me turn it over to Alan to give a summary of the final report.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm going to speed over the parts that you've all heard seven times already. Thank you. As you know, the PDP was instituted 2 years ago following an issues report requested by the At-Large Advisory Committee after a great discussion within council. The charter was the PDP was unanimously adopted with a charter that addressed five specific questions: whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their domain names, whether expiration-related provisions in registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough, whether adequate notice exists to alert registrants, where additional measures should be implemented to indicate that once the name enters the auto-renew grace period, it has expired, and whether the transfer should be allowed during the RGP. I will point out that although we spent much time discussing what these items should be, there was relatively little understanding of what they actually meant, which did add to some confusion along the way. We have published a number of reports, including a proposed final report earlier this year. The work group meticulously went over the comments and made sure that we understood them and addressed them all. There is a document that is not part of the final report but is pointed to, reviewing that analysis and how we responded to the public comments. Of all the criticism that had been laid over at ICANN groups over the years that we ignore comments, I think we did a good job in this case. The work group believes that we are adding additional guarantees to registrants regarding renewal after expiration. In fact, not additional guarantees, but we are putting in guarantees which were not in existence before. We looked strongly at education issues with the belief that we have to do our best to try to make sure registrants understand what they're getting into. And I'll have a few more comments as we go along on that. And all of the recommendations we made, even when they are substantial changes in policy, are not substantial changes in practice from what many registrars, but not all, have been doing all along. And I'm pleased to report that we have full consensus within the working group on these particular outcomes. The first one is a relatively simple one. We've defined a term, which an unwieldy term, but a term nonetheless, of registered name holder at expiration. It was quite clear when we started talking about this discussion that it was unclear who was allowed to renew. We had some discussions with compliance, and they basically said if there's nothing in the contract about renewal, there are no rights. And we understood we better define the term carefully, and we have done that. We have several recommendations on what happens at post-expiration. The first one is that for a minimum, but not a specific number, but a minimum of 8 days after expiration, the name shall be renewable. The website during that 8 days must, if there is a website, the domain for that 8-day period must not function as it did originally, and if there is a website that a registrar has put in to intercept traffic, it must explicitly say that the domain has expired and what the registrant must do to renew it. And the registrar cannot take action which will prevent a registrant from renewing simply by changing who is information and similar things. By the way, I have full slides on all of the recommendations. If we want to go into any one of them in more depth, we can do that. There are a number of recommendations requiring disclosure of certain things by the registrar, and requirements on notifications. The first one is that the fees charged for renewal must be posted. The EDDP policy enacted several years ago specified a similar thing about the RGP renewal fee or recovery fee, but did not mention anything about regular renewal. This fills that gap. There must be a clear indication of how the registrar will notify people. It's fine to say registrants should make sure to listen to notices that are sent, but typically a registrar will not, prior to those notices being sent, say how the notices will be sent. Are they email? Are they telephone calls? If they're email, to what address? And registrars will have to disclose that according to this policy. The current RAA implies two notices prior to expiration are required, but it's done in a rather backhanded way. This policy says it must be explicit and sets at specific times at which those recommendations, those notices or notifications should be sent. And the notifications must be ways that are what we normally call push technology. They cannot all be pull technology. So the registrant should not have to explicitly do something they don't normally do to find out to read the notice. That's specifically aimed at notifications that are set only in the registrar's domain management system. That is, if you don't log on, you don't see the notice. And we are recommending a best practice, a number of best practices that talk about where those notifications go. Currently, if you have a domain, blah.org, and if your email contract addresses are at blah.org, user at blah.org, if the registrar has stop the domain from working, as most registrars do, a notice sent to that email address is known to not be able to be delivered because the registrar has taken explicit action, and yet there is no cognizance of that. So registrars will regularly send out notices which, if one thinks about it, they know they cannot be delivered. We are suggesting that they take a number of actions to try to prevent that. The RGP, the Redemption Grace Period, which is currently implemented by most but not all of the sponsored of the unsponsored GTLDs, and is not required within the new GTLD process, we are recommending that all registries except the sponsored registries, the existing sponsored ones, must implement the GTLD, the Redemption Grace Period. The impact on existing GTLDs only applies to .name. All the others currently have the policy in the service in place, although they're not required to continue it forever. And it, of course, adds it to the requirements for all new GTLDs. And we are saying that all registrars must offer the RGP if they're working with a registry that services it. So we should never be in a position where a name has been deleted, is in the one-month RGP period, but cannot be redeemed because the registrar won't do it. And we have a recommendation that ICANN, with the assistance of a number of other parties, must develop a variety of educational materials, and that when they are developed, registrars must point to them and optionally perhaps adapt that material for their own specific situation. And lastly, there is a requirement that ICANN compliance, in line with what we've done with other PDPs recently, be in a position, or ICANN, not necessarily compliance, monitor the situation and report back to council so that we get some idea of whether what we have done is successful, whether it needs to be fine-tuned or whatever. Although I'll point out we don't have a process for that fine-tuning if we decide it's necessary, but we'll ignore that for the moment. A number of members of the working group have indicated they will likely be available to work with compliance, not with compliance, with ICANN staff in implementing the recommended policies and recommended processes. This is in line with a recommendation of the PDP work team that there be involvement from the original developed in the implementation process to make sure that that the intent of the policy is implemented if the wording was not sufficiently clear in the actual documents. And I have one more comment, which is not in a slide. And this PDP has been going on for 2 years. As acting chair, as I'll point out, I never was actually made chair of this group, but I pretended. It has been a challenge. Various people came into this and groups came into this PDP with very different positions, and we came close to dissolving a number of times and going back to council and throwing up our hands and saying we don't think we can come to closure on this. We ended up coming to closure. Either everyone is sufficiently happy with the recommendations or all sufficiently unhappy that we have had come to consensus that this is a reasonable outcome. And I would personally, as the person who has been seeing this through, like to thank the people who worked on the working group almost religiously. A number of them are in this room. I won't embarrass people by naming them, but they know who they are, and I can tell anyone else who cares that a number of registrars and a number of people from the user community have worked diligently on this, and for that I'm extremely grateful, and I thank them personally. Questions?
Okay, so on this item, there was, just to just recap, there was a motion that was sent around on the council list that has been subsequently withdrawn, or never officially made. It was withdrawn.
Yeah, just to clarify that, if I may, Jeff.
Okay, yeah.
I made a motion just to try and get this on our agenda because the deadlines were so short between our previous meeting and this one. We have, when I made the motion, I was obviously involved in discussions with both Tim as liaison to the group and Alan. They both felt that it was premature to make the motion then, so I've withdrawn it, and we are all still working on it now. There's some behind-the-scenes work going on to fine-tune the motion, make sure we present something that is good next time we present it.
To be candid, Stefan, I read your statement saying you are prepared to make the motion if Tim doesn't, but I didn't think you actually made it in that email. So there was some question, but regardless, it clearly wasn't made and seconded in sufficient time. There was at least one error in fact in the recommendation, and a few other things that some of us felt uncomfortable with. I think we're going to come to closure on it before the end of the day. I don't think there was any real intent to vote on this recommendation at this meeting, given that the final report was only published a few days before all of us got on planes. We certainly didn't make the publication deadline for discussing it at the meeting formally for public discussions. So withdrawing the motion at this point may well delay it for another 3 weeks and one council meeting. But I think in the interest of making sure that everyone believes the final outcome goes along with what the working group intended, I think that was a reasonable choice.
So if we could actually... you said it might be worked out by the end of the day. If we could have it before constituency stakeholder group day, that would be a really good thing because I think this is going to be the best opportunity for all of us to discuss it as a group. So that would go a long way. Even if we're not addressing it as a council this meeting, that would just help.
The only issue was, I can summarize it very quickly, the way the recommendation was worded, if you go back and look at it, at the motion was worded, was it was forwarding some of the recommendations to the board, but not others. And in light of the registrar statement in the comment period that the recommendations be treated as a group by the GNSO, I felt strongly that they should also be treated as a group by the board. And that they should all be passed on and with no subtle differences between them. And we're trying to come up with wording that will address that. At the same time, we recognize that the wording in the motions in our recommendations was slightly inconsistent in that some of them were worded as the working group recommends and others were just what the recommendation was. The recommendations that are worded the working group recommends become awkward to how do you pass that on to the board? Is it the working group recommending but not the GNSO? So we have a couple of rough edges to fix up, but I don't think there's any major dispute which will stop us from coming to closure soon. We may have to issue a slightly modified report that cleans up the language, but other than that.
Okay, let me take a cue. I have Wolf. Anyone else? All right, I'll put myself in after Wolf.
Thank you. Just a quick question to the last point. I'm a little bit confused. What is the working group is going to recommend to the council? Because so I understood there's maybe a difference between what you are recommending and what is in some services under discussion. So I was not clear from your last words. What is coming up with regards to recommendation? You were talking about some recommendations are recommended, others not. So I'm a little bit confused. Sorry.
The report has 18 recommendations. They are all recommendations. The wording of some of them use the expression "the working group recommends" in the text of the recommendation. Others didn't. That just made the language a little bit difficult to adapt into the motion that we pass on to the board. It's semantic only. It is not. There is no issue of what we're recommending. We are recommending 18 recommendations. We are recommending them be treated as a group. And it's only a matter of semantics at this point.
Okay, and just to I'll just do my comment, then I'll go to Carlos. Just so we know, this is, when we do vote on this, this is all going to be voted as capital C, capital P, consensus policies. That's the intent, right? So we just need to keep that. Well, these are for changes to contracts or no?
Some of the recommendations will be capital C, capital B, consensus policy. Other ones are not. The working group is saying we are treating the whole group as part of an overall package. Some of the recommendations, I think 13 out of the 16 will result in consensus policy, which will adapt contracts, and the others are part of the PDP outcome, which will not yield consensus policy, but are nonetheless what we believe as important parts of the overall structure.
Okay. On that point, Marika, and then I got to go to Carlos.
For those of you that are interested in the breakdown and the specific recommendations that relate to consensus policies and other issues, if you look at the background briefing that I shared with the council just before, I think everyone's getting on planes, there I tried to break it down into different categories of recommendations and also indicating the number of the recommendations that relate to each specific category, if that helps.
Yes, thanks. And I think just when we do vote on it, we're just going to have to track it in that kind of way so we know if there's a GNSO supermajority or not.
Right. But that's actually something that happens as well when it goes to the board, because initially one of the issues we had with the motion when I drafted it, that's my mistake, I put down indeed these are consensus policy recommendations, these are other recommendations, but what we've been told as well by our advised by ICANN Legal is that actually we shouldn't split that out, because whether it's a consensus policy or not is determined by what is in the contract and what is the voting threshold. So we don't need to spell it out in the motion. It becomes clear once the motion has been adopted, which voting threshold it achieves, and then an assessment is made, indeed, whether that fits within the contract.
Recall the new GTLD policy that the council adopted is not a consensus policy, but it was a recommendation that went to the board.
Okay, Carlos.
Thank you, Jeff. One question. Alan, when the working group study the recommendations or make the recommendations, are thinking also in some form to implementation of these recommendations or not?
We spent an immense amount of time and discussion on implementation, in that some of us anyway were very leery of a recommendation which might require a huge amount of work and result in very minimal payback. So, yes, we did focus on implementation. In some cases, we actually talked about what the implementation would be. Other ones, we simply wanted to satisfy ourselves that it was something that was reasonable. There were recommendations. There was one recommendation that all of us, registrars and users, unanimously agreed was very important, and we didn't make, because the implementation was such that we just didn't feel comfortable imposing it at this time, although we do suggest in the report that it be looked at some time in the future. So, yes, implementation was considered to a great extent.
The question is was because the second question is how you planned to be implement the recommendation to improve education and comprehension of the registrant.
Let me skip to it. You remember the number? Oops. What did I do? Okay.
You talk to
me. Let me talk while Marika's scrolling. How we plan to do it is both the registrars and the user community have some strong feelings about what kind of things should be included. As a matter of fact, at large and the registrars are talking privately about doing some very similar things that overlap with this. Let's be honest. We all agree that many registrants don't really understand what they're getting themselves into when they click on something and acquire a domain name. We also understand that no matter what you put, you're not going to guarantee that they do understand. People are used to ticking off, yes, I read it and agreed, without reading it and without agreeing and without understanding. On the other hand, if ICANN does not at least attempt to provide that information in an unbiased and clear way, we're not doing our job in trying to help the registrants that we know are out there and are not don't understand what they're getting into. It's not solely ICANN's responsibility, but I think ICANN cannot walk away from that completely, and that was the target here, that we have to at least try to put things out in a clear, unbiased way so that registrants have a chance of understanding.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Any other questions? Marilyn, yes.
Alan, could I just ask you, or could I just comment on what you just said? I actually think it is ICANN's responsibility to have clear, understandable communication materials. So I didn't quite understand your point. Maybe I misunderstood it. Because I would say, in fact, this is a really important part of what needs to be done, and I would have thought we were trying to convey it is ICANN's responsibility.
Well, to be short, if this recommendation is adopted by the GNSO and then the board, it is ICANN's responsibility. Before that, I believe it's ICANN's moral responsibility, but those don't have a lot of impact necessarily.
Okay. We could end the session on that. We're going to immediately go into the next session, but first I have to stop the recording.